And the way they describe it, it's not described as a bad thing or it's not described as a good thing. It's just described as a thing. And when they say it, it depends on how you take it. It's not that the situation changes, it's just whether I can handle or accept the situation that I'm fixing to step in. And in your life, it always works the same. It doesn't matter if it's your first day to go to kindergarten, or if it's your first day to start high school, if it's your first day to drive, if it's your first day of college, if it's your first day on the job, if it's any time you are fixing to step into a new land, into a new place in your life. You understand a part of you that I'm fixing to enter into a place that devours its people. I'm fixing to enter a land. Why is it, do I get nervous at kindergarten? I mean, this person's been hired to help me. This person's been hired to teach me. But I've got that fear that somebody else is going to succeed and I'm going to flunk and I'm going to do this and I'm doing everything I can. And as you move into jobs, it works the same way. You know, I'm going to get hired, but I hope I can do the job and I hope I can live up to what they're asking and I hope I can do better. It is because not that there's a bad thing there. It's that I am going to have to rise to whatever it is that I'm fixing to have to face. And that bothers us and that worries us and it puts fear and anxiety in our lives. Listen to how this is spoken. In verse 32 of chapter 13 of the book of Numbers, let's read. So they brought the Israelites an evil report of the land which they had scouted out, saying, "The land through which we went to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the Nephilim, or giants, the sons of Anak, who come from the giants. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and we were in their sight." Chapter 14, verse 1. "And all the congregation cried out with a loud voice, and they wept that night. All the Israelites grumbled and deplored their situation, accusing Moses and Aaron, to whom the whole congregation said, 'Would we that we had died in Egypt, or that we had died in the wilderness? Why does the Lord bring us to this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will be a prey. Is it not better for us to return to Egypt?' And they said one to another, 'Let us choose a captain and return to Egypt.'" Now that sounds like a horrible part. But let me explain what has happened. Israel has grown accustomed over 400 years of living in bondage. They've generationally learned to survive in bondage. They've generationally learned to be able to say, you know what, I can handle this situation, or it may get bad, but you know, we've always made it. Some people thrive on the fact that they have reached a plateau in their life, or they are at a state and they are stuck there because it gives them an identity and it gives them a place. And then all of a sudden, one day when you are delivered from that, whether it is alcohol, cigarettes, whether lying, cheating, cussing, whatever it may be, whatever in your life, it could be little, big, whatever you think it is, all of a sudden now I'm not bound by that. Now, I've always been bound by it. I've always been, in fact, it's always been a part of my family. It's always been a part of my, even the generations in my life. We've been this way, just like Israel. And now all of a sudden I'm coming out and I'm moving to this strange land. It's wilderness land. Now, wilderness seems like a bad place at first, because it's dry, there's nothing going on, there's nothing happening, there's no challenges in the wilderness. You get up and it looks like desert. You go to bed and it looks like desert. You get up the next day and it's desert. You go to bed the next night and it's desert. You ever work with people and all they ever do is complain about their job day in and day out, but they're there for the next 20 years? They just go in and they're like, you know what, I hate this job. I can't stand this job. It's the same old job I've done. And next week they come right back in on Monday. I hate this job. I don't want to. It's the desert life. When you're in a desert life, it's a place that there is no up and there is no down. You are just in a leveled place, just a definite place. And here's the thing. Ain't nobody fighting you for the desert. Nobody's fighting you to take over that piece of sand. Nobody's fighting you for that. Some of you are in places in your life. Don't worry. There ain't nobody trying to get your stuff. You don't have a house that nobody's driving by and worried about taking away. You don't have a car that anybody's worried about wanting to buy from you. You don't have a life that anybody's walking by and saying, man, now I wish I had that life. You don't have any of those things. You have a desert mentality. You just go about your business. You live your life. It just keeps on going. And nobody's after your stuff. And you're not after anything. Because what? Even if you conquered the next molehill in the desert, what have you really conquered? Even if you own the whole desert, you still just own the desert. And Israel had won some battles in the desert, fought in the desert. This is our desert. This is our wilderness. We're comfortable here. We've learned to live here. God supplies our need here. Now, notice now, most of these people are good church people. That's the whole sad part about people that a lot of times get into church. Because we're taught to trust God, depend on God. And once we're taught to trust God and depend on God, we make wonderful wilderness people. Because all really you got to do is trust God. What do you think Israel was doing? They get up in the morning, pick up the manna. They depended on the fire to keep them warm. They depended on the cloud to keep the sun from burning them up in the desert. They had learned to be good church people. They had learned, even built them a church out in the desert. They had their own temple out in the middle of a desert. Didn't nobody want to steal their temple? Didn't nobody want to rob their temple? Nobody wanted to come out in their desert. And then one day, God comes along and says, now I want you to go into a land. I want you to go into a land that's going to make you nervous. And I want you to go into a land that's going to bring anxiety into your life. Doesn't matter if it's one of us. I want you to put an application in for a job that you probably don't feel like you're qualified for. I want you to go back to school when you feel like, I can't do this. I mean, I could have done it 10 years ago, but I can't do it now. I want you to do something that makes you scared. I want you to step into something. Now, the world does it every day. That's why more worldly people are successful people. You know why? Because if you have a mentality that I need the next thing to make me happy, then you're going to fight to get to that next thing, right? And that's their world. Their world is, look, if I could just get to that car, if I could just get that house, if I could just get that job, if I could just get... So they don't have a problem cheating you to get it. Because their mentality is, if I can get there, I will be happy. And here's the Christian world on the other side. We're just depending on God. And the enemy has done a wonderful job of ruining both sides. On one side, he has one group just cutting each other to pieces, devouring each other in this pursuit. And on the other side, he's got this group that's just sitting there and hoping God will open a door. They're just wandering in the desert, just hoping God, just hoping. Now, I'm not going to put any applications in. But God, if you want me to have something, then let me bump into some rich somebody at Walmart and just let some miracle happen and let me get that job somehow, some way. And every now and then we hear one of those stories and we think, see, God did it for them. How come He's not doing it for me? And so Moses is told by God, go spy out this land. Go look at this land. God already knows what the land looks like. And we know the story of the 12 spies that go in. Joshua and Caleb are part of that group. And the spies come back and their report, I know they always say an evil report. And it is to a certain degree because all they're stating is the obvious. All they're declaring is the obvious. Notice with me, as we go back to this, and I want us to look at this very carefully. Verse 32. So they brought the Israelites an evil report of the land which they had scouted out, saying, the land which we went to spy out is a land that devours its inhabitants. Now, this bothers me. And it bothered me from the get-go because I couldn't grasp it. I'm like, now what do they mean, devours? It means it's a land where they are constantly trying to get more. They are constantly fighting or taking over. They are constantly in this. Nobody in the desert's like this. Where we come from, everybody likes everybody. That's why I like church on Sundays, Brother Lot. Because when I'm here, everybody hugs my neck and everybody likes me. And we get to hear good music and everything's good. But out there, I don't like it out there. Because out there, they're not like me. And they don't think like me. And they don't pray before they eat. And they look at me when I do bow my head. And I get all these looks and all this stuff going on. And I'm not like this land. This is a land where people devour each other, where they fight to move forward, where they go. And that was strange to Israel. That was kind of odd to them to see a group of people who fought to go somewhere. And in our minds, that's one of the first things that has to change. Is we get it in our mind that all of a sudden it's all God. Well, let me explain something to you. When you live in a desert, it is all God. When you live in a desert, it is all about God. But when you decide to move out of your place and to move into the next place that God carries you, then it will always be a place where you will have to learn to fight to survive or to go forward in that next place. Whether you're going to have to become more business savvy, if you're going to move into business, or whether you're going to have to become stronger, or whether you're going to have to become smarter, or whether you're going to have to do whatever you're going to have to do. But you're going to have to learn to fight into that land to take over that land. It's not that God doesn't want you to have it. In fact, the fact that you think about it, the fact that you want it, the fact that He's put the dream in your heart, is the fact, just like Joshua is told, look, Joshua, I've already given you this land. This land is yours. That's not the problem. But you're going to have to go in and you're going to have to possess this land. You're going to have to go in and take this land. There are going to be some fights. There are going to be some struggles. I want to show you, if I can, five things that you need to know when you start to reach in and decide to move from your wilderness place, from where you're comfortable, to where you want to go. Number one is this. These places, or let's just call them as they describe them in verse 33, said, there we saw the Nephilim, or giants, the sons of Anak who come from giants, and we were in our own sight. Look at the person beside you and say, in my own sight, as a grasshopper. Now, it wasn't that the giants saw this until afterwards. Notice how it says this. And we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. How I saw myself walking into that place, how I saw myself fighting that battle, how I saw myself doing that, is how they saw it. When we were younger, and I know people don't do that now, I see people all the time, they'll go get applications and fill out applications for whatever it is, Walmart or whatever it is they're trying to do, or a Quick Stop. And even a lot of times when I'm in fast food places, and don't tell my wife I go there, but I go to fast food places. And when I'm there once every 100 days or so, I'll see somebody in there filling out an application. And it's a lot different than it was when my growing up. I noticed some of the differences now, because When I was fixing to go for a job application, man, that was an important day. That was not just, let's go fill out a piece of paper, let me go get this. I used to make sure my clothes was ironed. I used to make sure I had khakis on. I had my best shoes on. I had my best... I mean, it was a day that when I was fixing to go do that, it meant that I was fixing to meet the boss or the guy who does the hiring or the one, at least, who made the stack of all those applications. And whether yours ended up on the top of the stack or whether somebody just went to the stack and picked a few up and said, yeah, that ain't happening. That don't happen, bro. Oh, it happens. And so it was odd to me now when I walk into a lot of times just to see people, I need an application. Looked like they just got up out of bed. And they're sitting there across the desk sometimes in these quick stops and places from the manager, and the manager's asking them questions, and they got no information with them. They got nothing. They haven't spent any time preparing and getting ready. You know why? Because they see themselves as probably you're not going to hire me anyway. I don't know. And I'm not even going to give you the gratification of looking down on me. I am going to go ahead and just be who I am, whether you like me or not, and whether you hire me. No. Don't get dumb on me. The goal is to get the job. And if I want to impress that person on the other side, then it's how I carry myself, how I walk, how I go about my business. I want you to see the Israelites, the very first problem that they have when it comes to these giants and different things is that they saw themselves as grasshoppers. And because they saw themselves that way, that's the way the giants saw them. That's the way their problems saw them. That's the way it didn't start with them looking at them saying, you're a grasshopper. It started with them saying, man, we're like grasshoppers. And the moment they said it, they began to see themselves in that aspect. Let me show you these five things. And we're just called them giants. Is that okay? Because that's the way they described them. It was giants versus grasshoppers mentality. Here's number one. That giants are going to go away. They are never going to go away on their own. They must be driven out. Here's the first thing you're going to understand. Up until now, when you're living in the desert, nobody's fighting you for anything. Nobody's wanting your stuff. So now you walk into a place and you think, well, you'll just move when I walk. No. It doesn't happen that way. Giants don't just move away. Giants don't just go away. Your problems don't just happen to wake up one day and all of a sudden they're disappeared. You can sit in this church for the next 20 years. That's why sometimes it's so frustrating when I give altar calls. Because in the anointing, I can a lot of times just about go out there and by hand grab you one at a time and say, look, God's already telling me this is what's going on in your life. Can I go ahead and tell you this is what's going on in your life? I know you two right now, y'all fussed all the way here today. Let's just go ahead and get this over with. I could do that, but then here's the problem. It depends on how you see yourself. It does not do any good to come and pray and ask if you don't see yourself. I just don't want to face it. I don't want to deal with it. I just hope it goes away. You know, maybe we'll have a better week next week. Let me explain something about giants. Giants don't just pack up their stuff and leave the land that you're wanting to enter. Just because you've joined the workforce doesn't mean the guy beside you is going to quit cussing tomorrow. Just because you've married into that family doesn't mean everybody's coming to church with you next week. It doesn't mean everything's going to work out. And everything's going to just happen overnight. Eric becomes a fighter mentality. I realize I'm going to have to fight to overcome. I'm going to have to take action to my problems. You're going to have to become intentional of dealing with your problems. You're going to have to set goals in your life. You're going to have to determine in your life, this is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to do it. This is how I'm going to go about my business. One thing Israel did not want to do, they did not want to take seriously that these giants were not going to leave and that they were going to have to battle them. Some of your biggest problems in here is not that you can't overcome. Coming into this new year, these giants that you want to overcome, these problems, whether it's financial, whether it's spiritual, or whether it's relational, here's the thing, you're going to have to become very strategic in what you do. If you want a better marriage, you're going to set up date nights. You're going to take one night a week and you're going to say, you know what, we're going out on dates. It may just be we go in the backyard because we ain't got no money. We just eat sandwiches in the backyard. I don't know. But you're going to have to decide. We're going to become strategic. We're going to become intentional. We don't book nothing on this night. You're going to have to decide. There's a fight that's fixing to take place. It's not just going to wake up one day and all of a sudden roll over. It's like, you know, I like you again. No. You're going to become very intentional about what you do. If you want to become more spiritual, if you want to become whatever avenue of your life, you are going to have to set up a plan strategically and fight for that plan. Israel didn't come back saying, guys, we need a plan to fight these giants. No, they came back with a mentality. And that's what we do a lot of times. I tell people all the time when they come into my office, when you come in with a problem, here's all I want to know. Who, what, where, and when. That's all I want to know. And if you hadn't got that, we don't need to be talking about it. Because that's all I'm going to care about. I want to know who's going to fix it, when they're going to fix it, how they're going to fix it, where they're going to fix it. It ain't no problem walking out and finding a problem. Remember the first guy I had come through the MIP in my church, and he, every week, you know, I noticed this about your Sunday school. I noticed this, and I cured that real quick. He walked in, he said, I noticed this about this part. And I said, you know what? That's your responsibility. I want you before next week to fix that problem. Well, I know. I said, no, shut up. I said, as of right now, it's your responsibility. I said, if you hadn't got it fixed next week, I said, I'm just going to tell the people you can't pastor, you're never going to make a decent preacher, just go ahead and get on out of here. Two things happened. He fixed that problem and he never brought another one. Because solving problems are not as easy as finding them. I'm around people all the time. And I there's two total different groups. There's the groups that head are down, they're doing stuff, they're getting, and there's a group that's heads up and noticing everything's going on. I like the group where head is down. Made my heart feel good last night watching Brandon and Ryan washing them dishes, head down, working. It just did my heart good. I thought, you know what, them boys ain't getting in no trouble right there. I said, I know where they are. I know they're being productive. I know everything is good. Now, when they're not, they're allowed to be giving people wedgies and doing all kind of stuff. It's just stuff goes on. You decide in your life, is my head going to be up or is my head going to be down? I don't do a lot of talking. I don't do a lot of stuff of that nature. I guess I'm just not good at that. But I'm good at head down. I'm good at getting it done. I'm not as good at talking about everything that's going on in the world. I don't keep up with it. In fact, this whole month we've had a wonderful time. Our family just shutting down some of the electronics in our life. And we decided, you know what, no TV, no nothing this few days, and we're just going to concentrate. We've had the best time in the world. And some only time it bothers me is like weather. Does that bother y'all? I understand now why they have the weather channel. Because there's something about that. A cloud can come up, something in you's like, I wonder if a tornado's coming. I wonder if... And I don't have no TV. I don't know. It's the only time it bothers me. I wonder if we're going to be here tomorrow. The Israelites, number one, had a problem because they thought that their giants would just pack up and leave. Young person, you're not just going to wake up one day and be smart. You're going to have to enter into that land, go into that school and fight. Adult, you're not just going to have a great life. You're going to have to enter into that land and you're going to have a strategy and you're going to have to fight it. To get to where we are in every aspect of this church, we have a strategy. We don't just wake up, this program, this the best is yet to come. It's a 4-year program. 4-year strategy to get us in that door. We're about 4 or 5 months away once we cut this next little drawings and cut them loose. I'm excited. I am flat out excited. And I'm wore out at the same time. Because 4 years is a long time to have a strategy, isn't it? Some of you, 4 weeks is a long time to have a strategy. Some of you can't make 4 days on a good strategy. But if you're going to be successful to enter into a land that you're not used to, here's the thing, you got to be a strategic person. If you say, I don't know how, Brother Lott, then find you the person who's already done it. Find you somebody who's, if you want to be in business, find you somebody who does business. Don't hang out with 3 guys that don't have jobs and ask them what you think you ought to do. Find you somebody who has done it. Find you somebody, and they're going to make you uncomfortable. Why? Because they're already in the land. And they look at you like, well, this is all you got to do, this. And it sounds easy to them, doesn't it? You ever meet somebody who's successful or in some area, and they just make it sound like, all you got to do is this, this, and this. And you look at them like, but it is that easy. Number two, the second thing that Israel needed to realize about this going into this land is that some giants have been in the land for a long time and they will not leave without a fight. Let me explain it this way. Some giants are generational. Let me go a little deeper in your life here. Some of your problems are not just your problems. Some of your problems in here are problems that came because of who your mom is. And because of who your dad is. And because of who your family is. You come from a family that does a certain thing. You were raised in a family full of whiners. They've whined all their life complaining about what everybody else has and they don't have. And you just grew up in that, and that's just become natural to you to whine just like that. My wife, I hate it. And I know she hates it too. There's certain times I'll do things, she'll say, now DeWitt. Don't that hurt when somebody looks at you and says those things? I am not my dad. And this time she does things. She can't find things. She's whatever. And I said, now Eddie, what are you going to do when I'm gone? Don't be calling me no Eddie. I ain't nothing like Eddie. Don't you hate it? But part of who you are is generational. And even though you don't like those things, to ignore them or hope that they just go away is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to reach a point in your life where you realize that addiction problem, that mindset, that situation, they're generational in my life, and I am going to have to deal with them in a generational way. I am going to have to realize that I'm going to have to disconnect from certain things or move away in certain areas. I'm going to have to decide in my life. In fact, if you want to deal with generational things, here's two things you've got to do. Two things to deal with generational problems. Number one is this. You have to put off your old self. That's why when I go and watch these people doing applications, it's hard. Because they don't want to put off their old self. We don't like the mentality of fake it till you make it. But I got a better definition for it. It's called faith. It's not faking it till you make it. Faith says, I speak things that are not yet there as though they are. I act in ways that I'm not even there, even though I am. In our lives, you're going to have to put off who you've always been. You're going to have to put off some of that. It was hard because my mom and dad, they were successful pastors in certain ways. But there was a lot I had to put off. Elisa's mom, 36-year school teacher, very successful lady. Don't sit on the school board. She's been on that for years, and now she's fixing to retire. This is a very successful lady. But for Elise not to be Eddie and for me not to be DeWitt, we had to put off some stuff. We gained what we needed, but then we had to put off and say, that's not exactly who I am. The second thing is you have to put on your new self. You have to put on your new self. Ephesians says it best. In Ephesians 4 and 22 through 24. If you ever want to look up those scriptures, they pull them up, we can do it. Ephesians 4, 22 through 24. War will always take longer than you think. Let me explain this about generational. There's still times I act like DeWitt. There's still times Elise acts like Eddie. Wars take longer than you think they will to fight. In the desert, there hasn't been wars. There hasn't been problems. I still got my same furniture. I still got the same color on the house. I still got the same color walls. I still got everything's the same. I still drive the same old car. Everything's the same. But war will always take longer than you think. That's why we don't do well at war anymore. America doesn't do well at war. I hate to say it, we don't. Most countries that go to war with us have a strategic plan. They know how to defeat us. They know not to put all their guns up front. They know just to stay back and to just snipe at us little by little by little. We are a weak people. Weak in the fact that we won't stick with things. And they know that about us. Just like this situation in Connecticut. We are knee-jerk people. When this happens, I'll tell you why it happened. It's just one sick, messed up person. That's all. Just one sick, messed up person. But from this, you'll have all types. From banning every gun to every type of protection system on the schools. There'll be people who start homeschooling their kids now because you can't even send your kids to school and trust the schools anymore. We're not built for fighting long term. We don't like the pain of anything. Let me tell you something about generational curses and generational fights. You're not going to get good at it overnight. You will not become good at it next week. When I left my home at 18 years old and went to become an associate pastor near Memphis with my uncle, I didn't get it cured in a year and a half. It took a year and a half just to find out all the stuff that I needed to cure. I didn't get it cured through four more years of evangelism. I didn't get it cured through 20 more years of marriage and pastoring. There are still days that I have to say, come on, Tim. Come on. In your life, understand, there's areas of your life that you will have to fight. And strategically set in motion. I'm not going there. The next one is simply this. Number three, once you defeat, once you push something out, always occupy the land that you win. Of all the things that I see all the time that happens in young Christians, this is the part that frustrates me the most. It's the fact that they'll get saved, they get clean, they get whatever, and they get situated, but then they don't fill it with anything. They don't put anything in the place of all what they've walked away from. And now all of a sudden this big hole becomes a vacuum for not only the same stuff, but a lot of times worse stuff. The Bible makes that very clear. He says, if you garnish a house, if you run an evil spirit, a demonic spirit out of a house, out of a person's life, and you think, good, it's clean, it's good, but you don't put anything in it. What happens is that one comes back. And they come back with seven worse than themselves. Let me tell you why a lot of people don't come to church. It's because they went to church. At one time in their life, they got saved. At one time in their life, they got clean. Do you think they're worse now than they were then? Absolutely. They're living a worse life now, and they'll tell you, I need to get back in church. Well, why don't you do it? Because I did it, but it didn't work. No, that's not the problem. The problem is that you got clean, but you didn't get connected. You didn't go any further. You didn't grow in any part of your life. Here's the thing you've got to realize about this. The Bible says that we need to be filled with the fullness of God. It isn't enough just to be empty of bad. You've got to start to fill your life with the fullness of God. You've got to fill your life with His Spirit, the fruits of righteousness. You've got to put some purpose in your life. You've got to decide, where do I want to be in 5 years? If God is going to be my strength, then what are we going to accomplish together? What are we going to do together in the next 5 years of our life? Number four is this. You're going to have to magnify God, not your giants. Let's go back to our story. And all the congregation cried out, chapter 14, verse 1. And all the congregation cried out with a loud voice, and they wept that night. And all the Israelites grumbled and deplored their situation, accusing Moses and Aaron, to whom the whole congregation said, would that we had died in Egypt, or that we had died in a wilderness. Does the Lord bring us to this land to fall by the sword? They're already declaring how they're going to die. Not only that, but I love this part right here. It even declares how their family's going to end up. Listen to what it says. Our wives and little ones will be a prey. Everything they see is happening. Everything they decree is bad. They have reached a point in their life to where now they're magnifying their problem. They're magnifying the situation. They're magnifying the circumstance. They're magnifying all the issues that are wrong. If you're not careful, if you don't fill your life with what it needs to be, what will fill it will be more discouraging than what you had the first time. If you don't fill it with good stuff, then it'll fill itself with all the negative in life. If you don't do like Joshua and Caleb and decide, no, we are well able, with God, we're well able to handle this, then I promise you the enemy will show you everything that can go wrong. Some young girl sitting in here, if you don't fill your life with God and you start to think, I'm going to grow up and be an old maid, I'm going to have to live with my mom and dad the rest of my life, I'm going to be lonely, I'm going to have a boyfriend, we're going to have this and that. Before long, you'll grasp at anything just because you don't want to end up in this make-believe world that you think will happen. Some young man in here, you think to yourself, well, if I don't do this, if I don't have this, if I don't... Listen to me. It's not just enough to say, I'm not going to stay here, but I'm going to go into my land. But you're going to have to magnify God in it, or otherwise all the negativity around. Let me tell you what I deal with most of the time in people's problems. This is 99% of the problems I deal with. I deal with the view that someone has of their life at the present. 99% of the time. I deal with somebody coming to me and saying, here's what the doctor said. Here's what my wife said. Here's what I feel. Here's what I think. 99% of the time, I'm dealing with somebody's perspective over their life situation. Now, wouldn't it have been just as easy for them to walk in my office and say, Brother Lott, the doctor has said this, but you know what? I believe God's Word. And God's Word says this, and I believe God's going... Wouldn't it be just as easy to do that? Wouldn't it be just as easy to say, you know what, me and my wife, we're going through some stuff. Wouldn't it be just as easy to say, you know what, Brother Lott, I believe if me and you prayed, God will get up in the middle of this. I believe God can do something great. Then why don't we do it? Because a lot of times in our lives, our perspective, we store up the negative instead of magnifying God in the positive. Did I say there is no negative? Did I say there is no battles? I told you to begin. You're going to fight. But here's the thing. You have to decide before you fight whether or not you think you can win. I love this. I wish I could describe it for you. This Pacquiao and Miguel guy who just fought. Anybody keep up with any of that? They fought four times. I'm a huge boxing fan. And I can't pay the pay-per-view price, so I don't get to watch it very much, but I love to see the highlights later. And I'm a huge boxing fan. And I love this Miguel guy. Because at one fight, he kind of got robbed. He should have beat Pacquiao, and they gave it to Pacquiao. They fought two more times. One time was just a draw, and the other time, Pacquiao beat him on points, you might say. And so finally, they decide to fight one more time, fourth time. Fourth time they're going to fight. And I love this guy. After he's done been, quote, beaten three different times, this is what he did. He said, I hit Pacquiao. Every fight I fought him, I hit him. But I couldn't knock him out. He spent the entire training session this time building up that bulk just enough, about 5 extra pounds, and just working on one shot. This time, when he fought Pacquiao, same fight, same fighters, same everything. But the time he got the one shot in, he put Pacquiao on his seat. And Pacquiao didn't get up. He said that one decision... He said, I hit him every fight, but I hit him and he didn't go down. It just wasn't strong enough. But this time, I hit him good enough and with enough power to where he ain't getting up from that. in your mind, you have to decide. You have to get... The only way you're going to keep fighting at something is that you have to have a mindset that if I can just get to here, if I can just move to here, if I can just get myself... Because sometimes the battle seems like it's not going your way. And sometimes it seems like you're not going to win. And sometimes it seems like it's discouraging. But if all you ever think about, if all he ever did was saw the last seconds of that fight, all he ever saw of every fight was the guy at the end raising up Pacquiao's hand and his hand going down... Do you think he'd be excited about fighting? But what he did was, he said, in every fight I saw, I hit him right there in that third round. I hit him, but he didn't go down. In the next fight, the seventh round, I hit him, but he didn't go down. I'm going to hit him in this next fight. I'm going to hit him. But this time when I hit him, he's going to remember it. And Pacquiao lost that fight, not because he didn't fight any differently or do. It's the fact that this guy decided, I'm going to magnify the thing that I know is good. I know I'm going to hit him, but I'm going to hit him hard. Magnify God instead of your problems. This is what Israel struggled with. The last is simply this. Run towards your giant. Don't retreat. Whatever that area is in your life this morning, walking away from it, backing up from it, not wanting to deal with it, will never cure it. Never cure it. Do you know how many times in my life I've wanted to leave all season? Bunch of them. And it ain't because I want to go to bigger churches. I'd like to just go back to a regular job. It may sound strange to you. If you know my personality and you know me, you know I don't get up in the morning like, ooh, I get to talk from a whole bunch of people. My personality's not built that way. And it is the hardest thing for God to train in my life. Tim, don't run from problems. Run toward them. Don't ever run from it. Run toward it. I had a chance this week to take Blake to the hospital, his friend who had shot himself in the stomach. And him and Blake worked together some, and they're good friends. And we walked in, and Blake was like, look, I don't know if I can take this. I said, sure you can. We walked in, we talked to his wife, and of course her husband has got hoses all in, and he's in ICU. It's not a good looking situation, and he's all drugged up. And Blake just sit there and looked at him, and I talked to the man for just a few minutes, and I talked to him. He knew who I was, and tears come down his eyes, and I said, oh, I'll be back. We're going to eat a hamburger together, and we're going to talk about some of this stuff. And we walked out, and Blake said, I don't see how you do that. I don't see how you're going to walk in there. And he said, I'm still in shock. And I said, Blake, you got to go at it. So one thing I've learned in my life, you cannot keep retreating from the situations in life. You just have to walk into the room and deal with what's next. Sometimes I walk in and those situations don't make you smile. Sometimes you walk in, they've just had a new baby or they've had something, and you're just like, all right, those are the good ones. But you can't ever retreat. Whatever it is you want to go beyond in your life this next year, you're going to have to face your giant. You're going to have to decide that the land you go in, it does devour its people. But if it's God who sent you into that land, you have another promise. No weapon that's ever been formed will ever prosper against you. 1,000 may fall to your left hand. 10,000 may fall to your right hand. Those we read that and we're like, oh man, I don't. No, think about it. People dying all around you. People falling to pieces all around you. Family members falling to, and here you are standing in the middle of it, and you're still going forward. You're still moving forward. It doesn't seem right, but it is. Because somebody, God has got to send somebody into the land. Somebody's got to stand there and say, look what God can do.
Somebody needs somebody in that workplace to tell them, look what God can do. God needs somebody in that school to tell the other students, look what God can do. I was so excited. I hate Stella's graduated. I wish she had another year. Because I used to love the stories she'd come back and Stella's a prayer. So I like praying people, and of course that's exciting because it's always like, if there's a problem, we need prayer, and I like that. And so she'd always come to me and situate, I got this test coming up, I need you to be in prayer, and I'd get texts from her just afterwards. Pass that test, ace that test, da, da, da. And then she'd come with a testimony of how she'd tell the other students, and they'd say, nobody passes that test the first time. And then she'd pass it. Somebody's got to go into that land. Somebody's got to go into that place and stand for God and say, I was born to fight. Christians are not the weakest people. Christians are the strongest people you'll ever meet. Because we weren't built for deserts. We were built to tear down gates, to destroy Jerichos, to take on inhabitants, to fight uphill against giants. We were born to do what nobody else could do, to win battles that nobody else can win. Listen to me very carefully. David, later in the Bible, in 1 Samuel 17, shows this illustration when there's one giant named Goliath. And David, without a sword, without weaponry, one young boy takes on the giant. That's symbolic of what God was telling Israel. Listen to me. If I'm with you, you hadn't got to worry about who you're facing. You hadn't got to worry about whether you feel equipped enough. You don't have to worry about whether, you know what? Giants make good targets. I'll tell you something about your giant in your life. You don't have a hard time seeing him when you're at home. You don't have a hard time finding him. Your giant sticks out like a sore thumb. It makes him easier to hit. You ain't got to look for him. He's not going to sneak up on you. He's in the room. Now face him up. And realize that with God, you can conquer him. Young person, with God, you can make those grades. You can make that life. Adults, you can be that person you want to be to your kids. You can be that mom, that grandparent. You can be that person. You can do it. All things are possible through God who strengthens us. Will you bow your heads? Father, God, there's some...